This is Inside Wealth, the ultimate disclosure on Talk 910 KNEW. Living a healthy and happy life is about awakening to matters of your wallet, balanced by concerns of your heart. Now, Stu Zimmerman.
Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome back to Inside Wealth. Unless, of course, this is your first time, in which case, welcome. Because week after week, we talk about the kind of wealth that money just can't buy. We're talking about a joy for living. Because truly, it is the greatest gift we could possibly ever receive, is simply our gift for being alive. And that's what it's about. Every week, we do our best to feel more alive in our bodies, knowing full well that these bodies are made with planned obsolescence and they're going to go sooner or later. For most of us, we certainly hope it's later, as in much later. And we also know it's very easy to get caught up in the bills, in the scorecard, which many people call money. And you know, you do know. It is so much more than that. It's really about appreciating our lives. So who better than to have in studio with us today, Mike Robbins, author of Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. Just a little insight into Mike here. Used to be a pitcher with Stanford in the Royals organization. He blew out his left arm, couldn't pitch anymore. A lot of people could wind up drunk at the bar, right? Mike pulled it together and is now consulting Fortune 500 companies like Chevron on the power of appreciation. And it's more than just having your capital appreciate. We also have with us today Kevin Grauman in our Brain Trust segment. Kevin is the entrepreneur extraordinaire. In 2005, he won Entrepreneur of the Year Award by Ernst & Young. He's the founder and chairman of Importal, Inc. It's a developer of software for human resources. But before we get to Mike and Kevin, you get this week's Bowl of Stew. Now, this week's Bowl of Stew is like many other stews. It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You mix it all up, and you come out with one thing. So let's start with some ingredients here, and let's see what we wind up with. Because frankly, it's as much of an experiment for me as it is for you. And I think you may know by now if you've listened to the show before, and if you haven't, please, please, please come to our website at insidewealth.net. That's insidewealth.net, where week in, week out, we really have remarkable programs, all designed to put a little bounce in your step. And you know what? It even comes with some practical calls to action. So you can actually take some of what we offer you here, whether it's in the bowl of stew or through one of our guests, and really apply it in your life to really enrich it and take it to the next level. Because that's one of the things about life. You know, we all like this human growth experience. It may not like it in human growth hormone if you're Rick Ankiel, the ball player on the Cardinals, but basically, growth is one of the things that seems to be within all of us as something natural. That no matter how much money we have, we all want a little more growth. No matter how much love we have, there's always an opportunity, even as we can be grateful and appreciate what we have in the moment, there's an opportunity for even greater unfoldment. Such truly is the greatest gift we could possibly have, this thing called life. It's truly the antithesis. Remember that movie Network? Peter Finch opens up, the network anchor opens up the window and screams out and tells the whole city to scream up at the top of their lungs, "I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore." He actually won an Academy Award for that one line. In fact, he was so angry, he actually received it posthumously. Shows you what anger can do to you. Well, here, I'm going to offer you up the antidote. This is a new network here. We're InJoy Media is the parent company owning this Inside Wealth. So this is the InJoy Network version of that. I want you all to do this three times a day. Today is a great day to be alive. I want you to share that with three different people. As many days as you possibly can. No matter how crappy you're feeling, no matter how much you feel like, you know, your stocks have gone down, or the bills are choking you, or your wife or your husband has been, you know, engaged with somebody else, or whatever else is going on in your life, or the kids are getting on your left nerve, whatever it happens to be. I want you to go out and tell three different people today, and frankly, keep on going. Don't just limit it to today. But we can start with today because here is where we are. Today is such a great day to be alive because no matter how lousy our lives are in a given moment, it certainly does beat being on the other side of that sod, doesn't it? So not knowing how many more of these moments we do have left in these human spacesuit of ours, the more we can focus on what a great day it is to be alive, the more likely that it is. So I want to follow up with a bit of a bowl of stew that we had from a couple weeks back that we get to stir into this pot. We had Marcia Weider on, who was truly fantastic. It was a great show. And I invite you, if you haven't heard that one, come to InsideWealth.net and listen to it. And she's America's dream coach. So in honor of her, we talked about dreams. And it just so happened to be my daughter Ilana's 15th birthday that weekend. So in the bowl of stew, I kind of hearkened back to those days of yore when I was 15 and invited you all to do the same because we all had dreams and visions for what our world could be, what our lives were going to be. And it seemed to be a little starry-eyed, a little open, a little wide, where anything is truly possible. And then we started having a family and a job and a career and responsibilities and now, the only thing that's possible is that, you know, we keep getting those bills every month. So I checked in at the birthday party with Ilana and a few of her 15-year-old friends to kind of check in and ask, how is life being 15? What do you think? What do you think of this world of ours? And the first thing they said is, what is up with racism? Now, there were four girls there. One was a black girl, three of Caucasian, all honors students, all of them honors students, taking one AP form or another, AP Chem, AP Bio, AP, you know, Spanish, whatever. I got to tell you, I'm not sure about you, but they far exceeded where I was when I was in 10th grade. And I thought I was reasonably hot, you know what, back then, in any event. They really wondered, why is there racism? It just doesn't speak to them. They are great friends. They have friends who are white, black, and Asian, and whatever, Hispanic. It doesn't make a difference to them. And they don't understand. It does not compute. They went on to say it doesn't even compute, not that they're even there yet, in terms of their own activities, at least to my knowledge, but even in terms of sexual preference. They said, does it really make a difference if you're gay or lesbian or straight or, you know, heterosexual or whatever? Does it really make a difference? You're still a human being. You still can be friendly. You can still be nice. You can still have fun together. You can still play together. You can still work together. You can share your thoughts and experiences of life together. What's the big deal? They just didn't get it. Which made me really get it, in a way. That this whole thing about hate, it's all learned. It's all learned that we don't necessarily have to hate each other or mistrust each other simply because we look different, pray differently than one another. It doesn't make a difference. Unless, of course, you believe it does. So it's really a matter of what we pay attention to. And what's really clear is these girls are paying attention to what they have in common. They're all here, 15-year-olds, learning about life, gossiping about boys, trying to figure out who's the, you know, the B-I-T-C-H in the world and who isn't, you know, and go about their shiz and all the other YouTubes. And they're also going to be not only the leaders of our world in about another 20 years, but for many of us who are parents, this is what we live so much of our lives for, is to help make the world a better place for them. And they told me loud and clear, we are all in this together as human beings. Let's stop with the separation. And with that, it is truly a great day to be alive. And we're coming right back with Mike Robbins.
Right here on Talk Radio 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco.
Joining us today in studio is Mike Robbins. He's a speaker, author, coach, who's helped literally thousands of people create more awareness and success in their lives, professionally and personally. He used to play baseball, which is my favorite sport, over at Stanford University. Maybe you heard of that one. And also at the Kansas City Royals. So we have a pro on our hands here. And on top of that, he wrote a book recently called Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. And I know we all want appreciation in our lives, even that capital appreciation. And with that, Mike, thank you so much for joining us here on Inside Wealth.
Let's do it. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Before we get into the details of your book and how you go about your biz, how do you define success?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it's an individual process for everybody. You know, part of my background, which is ultimately what led me to do what I do now and write this book, is that, you know, I played baseball, as you mentioned, and I was 23 years old. I was in my third season in the minor leagues with the Kansas City Royals. My goal since I was seven was to pitch in the big leagues, and I went out one night and pitched, and I blew out my arm. And just like that, after starting playing baseball as a little kid, you know, my career ended, and I really had to take an inventory in my own life about what does success mean, because to me, success only meant being a major league superstar, and that obviously didn't happen. But the good side of it was, as I looked back on the whole thing, I realized the only regret I had was that I didn't fully appreciate it while I was doing it. So now what I do in my work and in this book, Focus on the Good Stuff, is teach people how to appreciate life while it's happening, which I think is a key to success, as opposed to just trying to achieve and succeed all the time.
How do you go about achieving this in your own life?
Well, it's a day-by-day practice. I mean, really, all of us are wired up a little different, but most of us in this culture, especially those of us that are interested in, you know, accumulating wealth and success and achieving great things, often are challenged in our sort of type A neurotic way of running around trying to get more stuff. We forget to actually stop and look at what's happening and what's good. It usually takes something bad, a tragedy, a death, an injury, an illness, something like that, for us to stop and go, wait a minute. Life's really great. I just wasn't paying attention. I was so busy trying to get somewhere. And really, as I teach and focus on the good stuff, there's a lot of specific tips and techniques and practices that people can do. Simple stuff on a daily basis that make it easier for us to notice what's good and what's going on.
You know, I can understand that having your arm blow out after living your entire life focusing on one particular dream and one particular form of success, that it could really, you know, when you have that robbed from you, it can really take you to a point of despair. Did you actually get to that kind of level where it's like, you know, what is this all about? Or how did you make the transition to living a life of appreciation? Because it's very easy to go about being disgruntled, frankly.
Absolutely. And I did. I mean, I suffered from, as I talk about in my book, I suffered with depression. It was a really difficult time for me. I had had some struggles, you know, personally prior to that. And actually, that was all a blessing as well, because I realized after I was having really a tough time with it that I had a choice. You know, I could be 50 years old sitting at the end of a bar telling everyone how great things used to be or could have been, or I really could, you know, take my life into my own hands and take some of my experience and help other people with the process. So that's what I chose to do.
So clearly you've had a huge life disappointment, mm-hmm. At least one.
Oh, yeah. A few others, too.
Yeah, well, you know. Well, career and profession is always a biggie, especially when it's timed out with fame and fortune.
Sure.
You know, like it kind of amps it up several notches.
Yep.
And you have gone beyond that. So let's talk about that a little bit, because in your book, you do talk about our culture, mm-hmm. which in fact it frequently kind of breeds negativity and fear and complaining and competition in the negative form. To the extent that it becomes a scrum for the almighty buck, you know, and really gets us out of our being in our heart or our value system.
Yeah. Well, and if you think about it, I mean, you look at the media, you listen to a lot of what's on the airwaves, unfortunately. A lot of it's not a lot of good news. And, you know, I was in a cab back in April in Houston. I just got done speaking at an event for Chevron, and it was the day of the Virginia Tech shooting. And I was, like so many people, I was really impacted by that. And I got in the cab, and I started talking to the cab driver, and he was actually from Ethiopia. And in the conversation, I said to him, what's your take on America, given that you didn't grow up here? And he asked me, he said, can I be honest with you? And I said, please. He said, well, I think most Americans are spoiled brats. And I said, really? He said, yeah, Mike, I grew up in Ethiopia. To me, every day here is a good day. And I thought it was such a good reminder, even in the midst of that day of tragedy, to stop and realize, you know, again, it's not that our lives are perfect, and I don't mean to belittle anyone's challenges, but there's so much good stuff happening around us, especially given that we live in this culture. And I think if we take more time to do that and to appreciate it, it does go against the grain a little bit. Some people will laugh at you or make fun of you because it's not the normal conversation in the office or often even at home. But we all know when we choose to do that, it makes a big difference in our lives and our relationships.
We're here with Mike Robbins, who's a coach, an author, a speaker, and also recently wrote this book called Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. And I can't help but be struck by something you've said, just even in the title, Focus on the Good Stuff. You know, there's this old Indian story about this karmic kind of battle between these two dogs, one of light and one of darkness, one of good, you know, the goodness versus the evil. And the question is, who wins? And the answer is the one who gets fed.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about, it's simply a matter of focus and where we're placing our attention.
Yeah, it's a choice. I mean, and again, this isn't a denial of the challenges or the negativity, but I believe in this culture, most of us are, you know, we're sitting in the first class cabin of life complaining that we're not in the presidential suite. And it's not about being complacent, because that's one of the fears. As I talk to really successful, high-achieving people, because we were all taught, I know I was taught this as an athlete, like, don't get cocky, don't get complacent, the competition will pass you by. This is not that at all. This is taking inventory of what's good, especially, by the way, when things aren't going well. That's the time we often throw all the positivity out the window and we just obsess about the problem. And as we all know, obsessing about the problem or the issues in our lives doesn't make them go away. So what we got to be able to do, as you said, is feed that dog of lightness, so to speak. What are we paying attention to?
So how does this play in corporate America? Because, you know, on one hand, they are completely focused on a bottom line,
yeah,
which is financially oriented, which, of course, frequently is not a humanistic approach to life.
Right.
And it's very difficult to appreciate anything else other than the next sale.
Yeah, and it is a challenge to some degree, but I got to, you know, be honest with you, in 7 years of doing this in the corporate world, when I first started speaking about it, there was a lot more resistance. I'm finding that I think the awareness is growing. You know, the Department of Labor came out with some statistics a few years back that said, of all people in America who leave their jobs, 64% of them said the reason they left was because they don't feel appreciated. So it's the number one retention and morale issue across the board, across industries in our culture. And I think that most organizations, especially ones who are committed to success in these modern times, know they have to do a better job of appreciating their people to get the most out of them. So it actually relates to the bottom line. And the other piece of it is that I empower all of my clients, my corporate clients, to do is remember that appreciation doesn't necessarily just have to come from the top down. This is a team phenomenon. This is a peer-to-peer, we can do it for each other all the time, because recognition, like a bonus or a raise or some kind of title bump, is specific from the top down, but appreciation can happen every day from anyone to anyone.
Again, we're here with Mike Robbins, and we're talking about the power of appreciation. The question now comes to mind here for me as we talk about corporations where they may understand that to empower their bottom line, they need to have this appreciation thing going on. How does it actually become authentic? Yeah. Because they can understand it on one hand. Okay, I need to go through the motions of pat on the back and say, hey, great job, guy. Keep it up. And hey, pass that one on to that one and so on. But that there are other structures and other communications and other ways of being in place that actually undermine it. And yeah. So how does it become, you know, something that really is authentic and sustainable as a way of really shifting a culture?
Well, that's a great question, Stu, because one of the things I teach people all the time, it's got to be genuine, it's got to be real, or it doesn't, you know, it doesn't work. And it can be a challenge because there aren't always structures in place, and it's got to kind of go both ways. You have to create some structure, like organizations that have recognition programs and do things that appreciate people are wonderful, but it's also got to be cultural and personal. I was speaking at a meeting for an big organization. It was their annual meeting, and I was talking about this from the stage, about the importance of being genuine, and someone in the back of the room raised their hand. And I thought they were going to ask a question, but they actually said, I'd like to acknowledge someone right now. Can I do that? And I said, of course. I love when stuff like that happens. And I said, would you mind standing up? And he stood up. And then he said, I want to acknowledge who happened to be the big boss, like the head of the whole group, right? And we'd already talked about how cynical people get about appreciation, especially of the boss. And you could see the whole room. Everyone started to roll their eyes. But I had the boss stand up. And the man in the back actually started to acknowledge the person in the front. And what was amazing is he was speaking from his heart. He was very genuine. It was very simple. But everyone in the room could tell he meant what he said. And all of a sudden, the cynicism sort of vanished, and people realized that's all it takes. It was like 30 seconds of genuine acknowledgement, eye to eye, heart to heart. Here's what I want to thank you for. Here's what I appreciate about you. And it was a better lesson than anything I could have told them, because they actually experienced it right there in the room.
Yeah, that's a great story, because, you know, especially tying in with your friend from Ethiopia, the cab driver,
yeah,
in terms of really creating a culture of spoiled brats. One particular face of that is some form of entitlement.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, a lot of us in the States, feel like just because we are here, we're entitled to something. We're entitled to a living. We're entitled to people taking care of us in some way, shape, or form. And we're tired to get paid a decent wage. And we're entitled to live a certain lifestyle, when in fact there really is this this give and take required.
Absolutely. And I think it goes both ways, because there is a sense of, from organizations to appreciate their people, but also for all of us on a daily basis to be thankful for what we have, because it's a lot. And everyone listening right now, whatever's happened throughout the day, it's taken 1,000 things to go right for you to be sitting there right where you are.
And stay where you are, because we'll be right back with more from Mike Robbins. You can appreciate this. We have more Wealth to Share right here on KNEW, 910 AM, San Francisco. We're back in studio here with Mike Robbins, speaker, coach, and author of Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. And we talked last segment about just that, exactly how powerful it can be to live a life with a sense of understanding and some gratitude and recognition. And let's drill down a little deeper, because I think we all know that it's so easy to get caught up in our lives, and so easy to either take for granted everything we have, or somehow simply not to appreciate the gift simply of being alive in these bodies and being healthy. Thank goodness. And sometimes we don't get that until we're ill.
It's very true. I mean, often, you know, you hurt yourself, you sprain your ankle, you get a little cold, and then all of a sudden you think, wow, I felt pretty good yesterday. How come I didn't appreciate that? And, you know, a lot of times even I think something bad happening, even the mundane, you know, on my way over here today, my car broke down. I take public transportation, showed up a little late, and I was noticing as I was on public transportation, I was really appreciating my car and that it almost always works. So, you know, it's really a matter of how do we look at things, and even the bigger things, we can be grateful for even the challenges.
And it's good news that BART showed up, the Bay Area Rapid Transit, so in fact, you actually had an alternative method.
So that
it all works out. So let's talk now about how we can ground. In your book, you talk about gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is a specific form of appreciation?
Yeah, well, and I really look at appreciation kind of in three levels. There's gratitude, which is sort of a general appreciation for life. And then there's acknowledging other people, which is specific. And then there's appreciating ourselves. So gratitude is really about looking for the good stuff. It's about seeing what's good, even in the midst of challenges or even in the midst of something great. And we've all got stuff to be grateful for. The question is, do we spend time actually being grateful?
Well, we've seen all kinds of things in the metaphysical world and the New Age world, you know, with your gratitude journals and whatever else it is. And, you know, at times it sounds a little Hallmark. With all due respect to Hallmark, who clearly has a big business about it, so maybe it isn't so bad after all. But the truth, as a lot of people see it, is that it seems a little hokey.
Yeah. Well, and it's got to be genuine. It's got to fit for your personality. You know, if we're writing in a gratitude journal would seem hokey to you, then don't do it. But figure out a way for you. I mean, one of the things I learned to do when I was in college, and I still do it. I literally did it this morning. I don't know if you can relate to this, but sometimes when my alarm goes off, I don't want to get up, right? I'm like, I'd rather stay in bed. And when I do that, what I'll do is I'll hit snooze, and I usually don't fall all the way back asleep, but I'll just go over a mental list in my mind. What am I grateful for? And, you know, it's a way to use something that happens on a daily basis to all of us, I think, in a positive way. So we've got to come up with regular practices that fit for us. Because as I say in Focus on the Good Stuff, most of this stuff is simple and straightforward. It's not that we don't know it. It's just that we don't practice it. And that's why we don't utilize the power of it in our lives.
You know, the power of gratitude, from my standpoint, really is huge. Because when we ask people, we've asked a lot of people, what do you really want in the world? What kind of life do you really want? It's amazing how many people don't know.
Yeah.
They just, maybe because they've never been asked themselves. And when we ask, okay, well, what are you grateful for? Well, that's a little more accessible.
Yeah.
Then it starts getting, because it's really a heart thing. Gratitude is really not a mind thing.
Right.
And we spend a lot of time in mind, especially in business.
Absolutely. And one of the things, I'll do this sometimes in my workshops, even in corporations, is I have everyone go around the room and talk about what they're grateful for. And even if people are a little resistant or, like you said, it seems a little hokey at first, it's impossible to be in a bad mood after you talk about and really get into that kind of heart space of gratitude. And the funny thing, even about what you were saying earlier about what people want, we're so often running around trying to accomplish things. When at the end of the day, we want to accomplish those things because why? We think we're going to feel good about it or about ourselves. But what if we just started there to begin with, right? Wouldn't it be easier to accomplish the things? I think so.
Exactly. And certainly the journey of accomplishing these things would be so much more enjoyable, which bottom line is I think what most of us really want. We just want to enjoy our time here. We want to enjoy our lives, enjoy our company, yeah. Whether it's the corporation company or just the people we're sitting around with.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, I think, the bottom line, and it's so funny that I think we make it much more difficult than it needs to be.
Mike, let's talk about the power of words. And again, we're talking with Mike Robbins here, who is an author, a coach, former left-hander phenom with the Royals, drafted out of Stanford and everything. So he knows what it's like to be highly competitive and take his physical body beyond limits that most of us can just not reach. So he knows what it's like to push the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And until the envelope pushed back.
That's right. Sometimes it does, right?
Sometimes it does. But, you know, you talk about in your book about the power of words.
Yeah.
Because they are powerful.
They really are. You know, we all heard when we were kids, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And unfortunately, that's a lie because we've all been hurt by words a lot more than any stick or any stone. And on the flip side, in terms of the positive nature of words, our words, I believe, don't just describe things, they create. So if you think about any goal that you have, you know, one of the things that we got to be able to do, I coach people on this all the time, is articulate our goals, say them out loud. And when the more we say something, the more it becomes true. So whether we're saying it about another person positively or negatively or about ourselves, our words are incredibly powerful, and a lot of us are really unconscious about the words that we use.
So how do you coach people to be more conscious, and are there certain words that are more powerful for us to be using than others which are more disempowering?
Well, as simple as it sounds, it's really to focus more on what we want than what we don't want. You know, I had a sports psychologist teach me when I was in college that our subconscious mind doesn't understand the concept of no or don't. So when I'd stand on the pitcher's mound and say to myself, don't throw a ball or don't give up a home run, I was actually sort of creating
right.
that to
all
happen.
All I hear is just saying home run, ball.
Exactly. So yes. With goals, it's really important, and I coach people all the time to both speak and write their goals in positive language. And when I'm working with someone and let's say they have a big meeting and they're worried about it, as would be normal, I'll say, how do you want it to go? And they'll say things like, well, I hope I don't screw up. Well, I hope I don't blow the deal. And I'll say, okay, that's fine. How about we flip that over? What do you want to happen? Like start to visualize and actually speak how you want it to go. Or if someone's looking for a relationship, oh, I don't want a guy like this or I don't want a woman like that. Okay, that's good information, but you want to take that information and flip it on its head and say, okay, if that's what you don't want, what do you want? And that simple shift is actually profound for a lot of people because most of us are usually speaking about what we don't want as opposed to what we do want.
So everybody out there, it's important to know what we don't want.
Mm-hmm.
And that will help to inform us what we do want and just speak from that place. That sounds rather simple.
Yeah, and if you think about conflicts, whether we're talking organizationally, in a group, at work, or even at home, we often will focus on what we're upset about with another person. Hey, stop doing this. I don't like that. And that's important. But again, what is it we ultimately want? And so often arguments and conflicts in our personal lives and professionally, there's so much language. And I do some conflict resolution mediation as well. There's so much language that's very negative and it's very much about don't stop no, as opposed to yes, how about this, that's more solution oriented. And again, as simple as that seems, most of us are kind of hardwired to go the other way.
So are there any practices that you would offer people listening right now that they can begin, if they haven't already, to become more focused on gratitude, appreciation, and obviously just the enjoyment of life in the moment?
Well, there's a couple simple ones. You know, one is to create a daily practice, whatever that is. Not hokey, not cheesy, but real for you. It could be a journal. It could be some kind of prayer or meditation. It could be talking with another person, but where you actually get to think and speak about from that heart place of gratitude what you're grateful for. The second thing is actually with, if you have a spouse or a significant other or just a good friend, is to actually practice complimenting them genuinely, like letting them know on a regular basis, proactively, not necessarily because they did something incredible, but actually practice doing this. I often say when I'm working with couples or individuals who are married or in a love relationship is pick three things new every day that you appreciate about your partner and let them know before the end of the day. And that's a bit of a challenge for people, but you can actually do it. And then a third thing related to that, again, if you have a family that you get down, you know, get together with on a regular basis, we often do this on Thanksgiving, but why not do it every day, is just sit around at the dinner table or at any time and just talk about, hey, what are you most grateful for from the day? The more we do it, the more we focus on it, the more it grows. That's just how it works.
You know, Mike, you mentioned also one of the aspects of appreciation is appreciating yourself.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard to appreciate others or the outside world when we don't appreciate ourselves. So for many people, it may actually begin there.
Yeah, that's actually the foundation. Now, it's the fifth principle in my book, the final one, but I go to it last only because it's often the hardest for people to deal with. And my mom told me when I was a kid, and I didn't even understand it or agree with her when I was little, she said, you know, you can't love anyone else unless you love yourself. And as I've gotten older, of course, I know how wise that was in terms of advice. And I think people need to realize that there's a big difference between arrogance and self-appreciation. Arrogance is based on fear and insecurity. Self-appreciation is really based on confidence and self-love. And if we can focus a little more of our attention on what we appreciate about ourselves, what are our natural gifts, what are we proud of, the things that we've both done and the qualities that we have in a genuine way, it gives us the foundation to then do that for others and see more of the good things in the world.
Mm. And my sense also is when we appreciate ourselves, we really don't need to get that appreciation from somebody else.
It's true.
We already have it, whereas the arrogance factor kind of requires that people kind of acknowledge us and respond to that image or veneer that we're presenting in the moment. And there you go. It's only about what? You know, yay deep.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, it becomes less necessary. And I talk to organizations about this all the time. If people start appreciating themselves within a group or within a family or in a relationship, it becomes less necessary for us to do it for each other. But ironically, more appreciation ends up flowing around.
Mm. And it comes out naturally, authentically,
yep,
and happily ever after.
Yes.
Mike Robbins, thank you so much for joining us today. You're fantastic. And I wish you all the success you could possibly want for yourself.
Thanks, Stu. I appreciate being on.